Piper asked.
Grain spirits, Hazel said. You don't want to meet them.
Piper didn't see how a grain spirit could be so bad, but Hazel's tone convinced her not to ask.
That leaves three of us to check on the mile marker, Percy said. Me, Jason, Piper. I'm not psyched about seeing Mr. D again. That guy is a pain. But Jason, if you're on better terms with him...
Yeah, Jason said. If we find him, I'll talk to him. Piper, it's your vision. You should take the lead.
Piper shivered. She'd seen the three of them drowning in that dark well. Was Kansas where it would happen? That didn't seem right, but she couldn't be sure.
Of course, she said, trying to sound upbeat. Let's find the highway.
Leo had said they were close. His idea of close needed some work. After trudging half a mile through hot fields, getting bitten by mosquitoes and whacked in the face with scratchy sunflowers, they finally reached the road. An old billboard for Bubba's Gas and Grub indicated they were still 40 miles from the first Topeka exit.
Correct my math, Percy said, but doesn't that mean we have 8 miles to walk?
Jason peered both ways down the deserted road. He looked better today, thanks to the magical healing of ambrosia and nectar. His color was back to normal, and the scar on his forehead had almost vanished. The new gladius that Hera had given him last winter hung at his belt. Most guys would look pretty awkward walking around with a scabbard strapped to their jeans, but on Jason, it seemed perfectly natural.
No cars, he said,
but I guess we wouldn't want to hitchhike.
No,
Piper agreed, gazing nervously down the highway. We've already spent too much time going over land. The Earth is Gia's territory.
Hmm.
Jason snapped his fingers. I can call a friend for a ride. Percy raised his eyebrows.
Oh, yeah? Me too. Let's see whose friend gets here first.
Jason whistled. Piper knew what he was doing, but he'd succeeded in summoning Tempest only 3 times since they'd met the storm spirit at the wolf house last winter. Today, the sky was so blue, Piper didn't see how it could work. Percy simply closed his eyes and concentrated. Piper hadn't studied him up close before. After hearing so much at Camp Half-Blood about Percy Jackson this and Percy Jackson that, she thought he looked, well, unimpressive. Especially next to Jason. Percy was more slender, about 1 inch shorter, with slightly longer, much darker hair. He wasn't really Piper's type. If she'd seen him in the mall somewhere, she'd probably would have thought he was a skater. Cute, in a scruffy way. A little on the wild side, definitely a troublemaker. She would have steered clear. She had enough trouble in her life, but she could see why Annabeth liked him. And she could definitely see why Percy needed Annabeth in his life. If anybody could keep a guy like that under control, it was Annabeth. Thunder crackled in the clear sky. Jason smiled.
Soon.
Too late.
Percy pointed east, where a black-winged shape was spiraling toward them. At first, Piper thought it might be Frank in crow form. Then she realized it was much too big to be a bird.
A black Pegasus? She said. Never seen one like that.
The winged stallion came in for a landing. He trotted over to Percy and nuzzled his face, then turned his head inquisitively toward Piper and Jason.
Blackjack, Percy said. This is Piper and Jason. They're friends.
The horse nickered.
Maybe later, Percy answered.
Piper had heard that Percy could speak to horses, being the son of the horse lord Poseidon, but she'd never seen it in action.
What does Blackjack want? She asked.
Donuts, Percy said. Always donuts. He can carry all three of us, if...
Suddenly the air turned cold. Piper's ears popped. About 50 yards away, a miniature cyclone 3 stories tall tore across the tops of the sunflowers like a scene from The Wizard of Oz. It touched down on the road next to Jason and took the form of a horse. A misty steed with lightning flickering through its body.
Tempest, Jason said, grinning broadly. Long time, my friend.
The storm spirit reared and whinnied. Blackjack backed up skittishly.
Easy, boy, Percy said. He's a friend, too.
He gave Jason an impressed look.
Nice ride, Grace.
Jason shrugged. I made friends with him during our fight at the Wolf House. He's a free spirit, literally, but once in a while he agrees to help me. Percy and Jason climbed on their respective horses. Piper had never been comfortable with Tempest. Riding full gallop on a beast that could vaporize at any moment made her a bit nervous. Nevertheless, she accepted Jason's hand and climbed on. Tempest raced down the road with Blackjack soaring overhead. Fortunately, they didn't pass any cars, or they might have caused a wreck. In no time, they arrived at the 32-mile marker, which looked exactly as Piper had seen it in her vision. Blackjack landed. Both horses pawed the asphalt. Neither looked pleased to have stopped so suddenly, just when they'd found their stride. Blackjack whinnied.
You're right, Percy said. No sign of the wine, dude.
I beg your pardon, said a voice from the fields.
Tempest turned so quickly, Piper almost fell off. The wheat parted, and the man from her vision stepped into view. He wore a wide-brimmed hat wreathed in grapevines, a purple short-sleeved shirt, khaki shorts, and Birkenstocks with white socks. He looked maybe 30, with a slight potbelly, like a frat boy who hadn't yet realized college was over.
"Did someone just call me the wine dude?" he asked in a lazy drawl. "It's Bacchus, please. Or Mr. Bacchus. Or Lord Bacchus. Or sometimes, oh my gods, please don't kill me, Lord Bacchus."
Percy urged Blackjack forward, though the Pegasus didn't seem happy about it.
"You look different," Percy told the god. "Skinnier. Your hair is longer, and your shirt isn't so loud."
The wine god squinted up at him.
"What in blazes are you talking about? Who are you? And where is Ceres?"
What Ceres?
"I think he means Ceres," Jason said, "the goddess of agriculture. You'd call her Demeter." He nodded respectfully to the god. "Lord Bacchus, do you remember me? I helped you with that missing leopard in Sonoma."
Bacchus scratched his stubbly chin.
"Ah, yes. John Green."
"Jason Grace."
"Whatever," the god said. "Did Ceres send you then?"
"No, Lord Bacchus," Jason said. "Were you expecting to meet her here?" The god snorted.
"Well, I didn't come to Kansas to party, my boy. Ceres asked me here for a council of war. What with Gia rising, the crops are withering, droughts are spreading, the Carpoi are in revolt. Even my grapes aren't safe. Ceres wanted a united front in the plant war."
"The plant war?" Percy said. "You're going to arm all the little grapes with tiny assault rifles?"
The god narrowed his eyes.
"Have we met?"
"At Camp Half-Blood," Percy said. "I know you as Mr. D. Dionysus."
"Ah!"
Bacchus winced and pressed his hands to his temples. For a moment, his image flickered. Piper saw a different person, fatter, dumpier, in a much louder leopard-patterned shirt. Then Bacchus returned to being Bacchus.
"Stop that!" he demanded. "Stop thinking about me in Greek!"
Percy blinked.
But do you have any idea how hard it is to stay focused? Splitting headaches all the time. I never know what I'm doing or where I'm going. Constantly grumpy." "That sounds pretty normal for you," Percy said.
The god's nostrils flared. One of the grape leaves on his hat burst into flame.
"If we know each other from that other camp, it's a wonder I haven't already turned you into a dolphin." "It was disgust," Percy assured him. "I think you were just too lazy to do it."
Piper had been watching with horrified fascination, the way she might watch a car wreck in progress. Now she realized Percy was not making things better, and Annabeth wasn't around to rein him in. Piper figured her friend would never forgive her if she brought Percy back transformed into a sea mammal.
"Lord Bacchus," she interrupted, slipping off Tempest's back.
"Piper, careful," Jason said. She shot him a warning glance. "I've got this."
"Sorry to trouble you, my lord,"
she told the god. But actually, we came here to get your advice. Please, we need your wisdom.
She used her most agreeable tone, pouring respect into her charm speak. The god frowned, but the purple glow faded in his eyes.
You're well spoken, girl. Advice, eh? Very well. I would avoid karaoke. Really, theme parties in general are out. In these austere times, people are looking for a simple, low-key affair with locally produced organic snacks and...
Not about parties, Piper interrupted, although that's incredibly useful advice, Lord Baucus. We were hoping you'd help us on our quest.
She explained about the Argo II and their voyage to stop the giants from awakening Gia. She told him what Nemesis had said, that in 6 days Rome would be destroyed. She described the vision reflected in her knife, where Baucus offered her a silver goblet.
Silver goblet?
The god didn't sound very excited. He grabbed a Diet Pepsi from nowhere and popped the top of the can.
You drink Diet Coke, Percy said. I don't know what you're talking about, Baucus snapped. As to this vision of the goblet, young lady, I have nothing for you to drink unless you want a Pepsi. Jupiter has put me under strict orders to avoid giving wine to minors. Bothersome. But there you have it. As for the giants, I know them well. I fought in the first giant war, you know.
You can fight? Percy asked. Piper wished he hadn't sounded so incredulous. Dionysus snarled. His Diet Pepsi transformed into a 5-foot staff wreathed in ivy, topped with a pine cone.
A thyrsus, Piper said, hoping to distract the god before he whacked Percy on the head.
She'd seen weapons like that before in the hands of crazy nymphs and wasn't thrilled to see one again, but she tried to sound impressed.
Oh, what a mighty weapon!
Indeed, Baucus agreed. I'm glad someone in your group is smart. The pinecone is a fearsome tool of destruction. I was a demigod myself in the first giant war, you know. The son of Jupiter.
Jason flinched. Probably he wasn't thrilled to be reminded that the wine dude was technically his big brother.
Baucus swung his staff through the air, though his potbelly almost threw him off balance.
Of course, that was long before I invented wine and became an immortal. I fought side by side with the gods and some other demigod. Heracles, I think.
Heracles? Piper suggested politely.
Whatever, Baucus said. Anyway, I killed the giant Ephialtes and his brother Otis. Horrible boars, those two. Pinecone in the face for both of them.
Piper held her breath. All at once, several ideas came together in her head. The visions in the knife. The lines of the prophecy they'd been discussing the night before. She felt like she used to when she was scuba diving with her father, and he would wipe her mask for her underwater. Suddenly, everything was clearer.
Lord Baucus, she said, trying to control the nervousness in her voice. Those two giants, Ephialtes and Otis, would they happen to be twins?
Huh?
The god seemed distracted by his thyrsus swinging, but he nodded.
Yes, twins, that's right.
Piper turned to Jason. She could tell he was following her thoughts. Twins snuff out the angel's breath. In the blade of Catoptris, she'd seen two giants in yellow robes lifting a jar from a deep pit.
That's why we're here, Piper told the god. You're part of our quest.
Baucus frowned.
I'm sorry, my girl. I'm not a demigod anymore. I don't do quests.
But giants can only be killed by heroes and gods working together, she insisted. You're a god now, and the two giants we have to fight are Ephialtes and Otis. I think they're waiting for us in Rome. They're going to destroy the city somehow. The silver goblet I saw in my vision, maybe it's meant as a symbol for your help. You have to help us kill the giants.
Baucus glared at her, and Piper realized she'd chosen her words poorly.
My girl, he said coldly, I don't have to do anything. Besides, I only help those who give me proper tribute, which no one has managed to do in many, many centuries.
Blackjack whinnied uneasily.
Piper couldn't blame him. She didn't like the sound of tribute. She remembered the Maenads, the crazed followers of Bacchus, who would tear up non-believers with their bare hands, and that was when they were in a good mood. Percy voiced the question that she was too scared to ask.
What kind of tribute?
Bacchus waved his hand dismissively.
Nothing you could handle, insolent Greek. But I will give you some free advice, since this girl does have some manners. Seek out Gia's son, Phorcys. He always hated his mother, not that I can blame him. He didn't have much use for his siblings, the twins, either. You'll find him in the city they named after that heroine. Atalanta.
Piper hesitated. You mean Atlanta?
That's the one.
But this Phorcys, Jason said, is he a giant? A titan?
Bacchus laughed.
Neither. Seek out the salt water.
Salt water? Percy said. In Atlanta?
Yes, Bacchus said. Are you hard of hearing? If anyone can give you insight on Gia and the twins, it's Phorcys. Just watch out for him.
What do you mean? Jason asked. The god glanced at the sun, which had climbed almost to high noon.
It's unlike Ceres to be late. Unless she sensed something dangerous in the area, or...
The god's face suddenly went slack.
Or a trap. Well, I must be going, and if I were you, I'd do the same.
Lord Bacchus, wait, Jason protested. The god shimmered and disappeared with a sound like a soda can top being popped. The wind rustled through the sunflowers. The horses paced in agitation. Despite the dry, hot day, Piper shivered. A cold feeling. Annabeth and Leo had both described a cold feeling.
Bacchus is right, she said. We need to leave.
Too late,
said a sleepy voice, humming through the fields all around them and resonating in the ground at Piper's feet. Percy and Jason drew their swords. Piper stood on the road between them, frozen with fear. The power of Gia was suddenly everywhere. The sunflowers turned to look at them. The wheat bent toward them like a million scythes.
Welcome to my party,
Gia murmured. Her voice reminded Piper of corn growing. A crackling, hissing, hot and persistent noise she used to hear at Grandpa Tom's on those quiet nights in Oklahoma.
What did Bacchus say?
The goddess mocked.
A simple low-key affair with organic snacks? Yes. For my snacks, I need only two. The blood of a female demigod and the blood of a male. Piper, my dear, choose which hero will die with you.
Gia, Jason yelled. Stop hiding in the wheat. Show yourself.
Such bravado,
Gia hissed.
But the other one, Percy Jackson, also has appeal. Choose, Piper McLean, or I will.
Piper's heart raced. Gia meant to kill her. That was no surprise. But what was this about choosing one of the boys? Why would Gia let either of them go? It had to be a trap.
You're insane, she shouted. I'm not choosing anything for you.
Suddenly, Jason gasped. He sat up straight in his saddle.
Jason, Piper cried. What's wrong?
He looked down at her, his expression deadly calm. His eyes were no longer blue. They glowed solid gold.
Percy, help!
Piper stumbled back from Tempest. But Percy galloped away from them. He stopped 30 feet down the road and wheeled his Pegasus around. He raised his sword and pointed the tip toward Jason.
One will die,
Percy said, but the voice wasn't his. It was deep and hollow, like someone whispering from inside the barrel of a cannon.
I will choose,
Jason answered, in the same hollow voice.
No,
Piper yelled. All around her, the fields crackled and hissed,
laughing in Gia's voice as Percy and Jason charged at each other, their weapons ready.
Chapter 11. Piper. If not for the horses, Piper would have died. Jason and Percy charged each other, but Tempest and Blackjack balked long enough for Piper to leap out of the way. She rolled to the edge of the road and looked back, dazed and horrified as the boys crossed swords, gold against bronze. Sparks flew, their blades blurred, strike and parry, and the pavement trembled. The first exchange took only a second, but Piper couldn't believe the speed of their sword fighting. The horses pulled away from each other, Tempest thundering in protest, Blackjack flapping his wings.
"Stop it!"
Piper yelled. For a moment, Jason heeded her voice. His golden eyes turned toward her, and Percy charged, slamming his blade into Jason. Thank the gods, Percy turned his sword, maybe on purpose, maybe accidentally. So the flat of it hit Jason's chest, but the impact was still enough to knock Jason off his mount. Blackjack cantered away as Tempest reared in confusion. The spirit horse charged into the sunflowers and dissipated into vapor. Percy struggled to turn his Pegasus around.
"Percy!"
Piper yelled.
"Jason's your friend. Drop your weapon."
Percy's sword arm dipped. Piper might have been able to bring him under control, but unfortunately, Jason got to his feet. Jason roared. A bolt of lightning arced out of the clear blue sky. It ricocheted off his gladius and blasted Percy off his horse. Blackjack whinnied and fled into the wheat fields. Jason charged at Percy, who was now on his back, his clothes smoking from the lightning blast. For a horrible moment, Piper couldn't find her voice. Gia seemed to be whispering to her.
"You must choose one. Why not let Jason kill him?"
"No!" she screamed. "Jason, stop!"
He froze, his sword 6 inches from Percy's face. Jason turned, the gold light in his eyes flickering uncertainly.
"I cannot stop. One must die."
Something about that voice. It wasn't Gia. It wasn't Jason. Whoever it was spoke haltingly, as if English was its second language.
"Who are you?"
Piper demanded. Jason's mouth twisted in a gruesome smile.
"We are the Eidolons. We will live again."
Eidolons?
Piper's mind raced. She studied all sorts of monsters at Camp Half-Blood, but that term wasn't familiar.
You're some sort of ghost?
He must die.
Jason turned his attention back to Percy, but Percy had recovered more than either of them realized. He swept out his leg and knocked Jason off his feet. Jason's head hit the asphalt with a nauseating conk. Percy rose.
"Stop it!"
Piper screamed again, but there was no charm speak in her voice. She was shouting in sheer desperation. Percy raised Riptide over Jason's chest. Panic closed up Piper's throat. She wanted to attack Percy with her dagger, but she knew that wouldn't help. Whatever was controlling him had all of Percy's skill. There was no way she could beat him in combat. She forced herself to focus. She poured all of her anger into her voice.
"Eidolon, stop!"
Percy froze.
"Face me!"
Piper ordered. The son of the sea god turned. His eyes were gold instead of green, his face pale and cruel, not at all like Percy's.
"You have not chosen," he said. "So this one will die."
"You're a spirit from the underworld," Piper guessed. "You're possessing Percy Jackson. Is that it?"
Percy sneered.
"I will live again in this body. The Earth Mother has promised. I will go where I please, control whom I wish."
A wave of cold washed over Piper.
Leo. That's what happened to Leo. He was being controlled by an Eidolon.
The thing in Percy's form laughed without humor.
"Too late, you realize. You can trust no one."
Jason still wasn't moving. Piper had no help,
No way to protect him. Behind Percy, something rustled in the wheat. Piper saw the tip of a black wing, and Percy began to turn toward the sound.
"Ignore it," she yelped. "Look at me."
Percy obeyed.
"You cannot stop me. I will kill Jason Grace."
Behind him, Blackjack emerged from the wheat field, moving with surprising stealth for such a large animal.
"You won't kill him,"
Piper ordered. But she wasn't looking at Percy. She locked eyes with the Pegasus, pouring all her power into her words and hoping Blackjack would understand.
"You will knock him out."
The charm speak washed over Percy. He shifted his weight indecisively.
"I will knock him out?"
"Oh, sorry," Piper smiled. "I wasn't talking to you."
Blackjack reared and brought his hoof down on Percy's head. Percy crumpled to the pavement next to Jason.
"Oh, gods," Piper ran to the boys. "Blackjack, you didn't kill him, did you?"
The Pegasus snorted. Piper couldn't speak horse, but she thought he might have said, "Please, I know my own strength." Tempest was nowhere to be seen. The lightning steed had apparently returned to wherever storm spirits live on clear days. Piper checked on Jason. He was breathing steadily, but two knocks on the skull in 2 days couldn't have been good for him. Then she examined Percy's head. She didn't see any blood, but a large knot was forming where the horse had kicked him.
"We have to get them both back to the ship," she told Blackjack.
The Pegasus bobbed his head in agreement. He knelt to the ground so that Piper could drape Percy and Jason over his back. After a lot of hard work, unconscious boys were heavy, she got them reasonably secured, climbed onto Blackjack's back herself, and they took off for the ship. The others were a little surprised when Piper came back on a Pegasus with two unconscious demigods. While Frank and Hazel tended to Blackjack, Annabeth and Leo helped get Piper and the boys to the sick bay.
"At this rate, we're going to run out of ambrosia,"
Coach Hedge grumbled as he tended their wounds.
"How come I never get invited on these violent trips?"
Piper sat at Jason's side. She herself felt fine after a swig of nectar and some water, but she was still worried about the boys.
"Leo," Piper said, "are we ready to sail?"
"Yeah, but..."
"Set course for Atlanta. I'll explain later."
"But..." "Okay."
He hurried off. Annabeth didn't argue with Piper either. She was too busy examining the horseshoe-shaped dent on the back of Percy's head.
"What hit him?"
she demanded.
"Blackjack,"
Piper said.
"What?"
Piper tried to explain while Coach Hedge applied some healing paste to the boys' heads. She'd never been impressed with Hedge's nursing abilities before, but he must have done something right. Either that, or the spirits that possessed the boys had also made them extra resilient. They both groaned and opened their eyes. Within a few minutes, Jason and Percy were sitting up in their berths and able to talk in complete sentences. Both had fuzzy memories of what had happened. When Piper described their duel on the highway, Jason winced.
"Knocked out twice in 2 days," he muttered. "Some demigod."
He glanced sheepishly at Percy.
"Sorry, man. I didn't mean to blast you."
Percy's shirt was peppered with burn holes. His hair was even more disheveled than normal. Despite that, he managed a weak laugh.
"Not the first time. Your big sister got me good once at camp."
"Yeah, but I could have killed you."
"Or I could have killed you,"
Percy said. Jason shrugged.
"If there'd been an ocean in Kansas, maybe. I don't need an ocean."
"Boys,"
Annabeth interrupted.
"I'm sure you both would have been wonderful at killing each other. But right now, you need some rest."
"Food first," Percy said. "Please, and we really need to talk. Baucus said some things that don't..."
"Baucus?"
Annabeth raised her hand. "Okay, fine. We need to talk. Mess hall, 10 minutes. I'll tell the others. And please, Percy, change your clothes. You smell like you've been run over by an electric horse." Leo gave the helm to Coach Hedge again, after making the satyr promise he would not steer them to the nearest military base for fun. They gathered around the dining table and Piper explained what had happened at Topeka 32.
Their conversation with Bacchus, the trap sprung by Gia, the Eidolons that had possessed the boys.
Of course,
Hazel slapped the table, which startled Frank so much he dropped his burrito.
That's what happened to Leo, too.
So it wasn't my fault,
Leo exhaled.
I didn't start World War III. I just got possessed by an evil spirit. That's a relief.
But the Romans don't know that, Annabeth said. And why would they take our word for it?
We could contact Reyna, Jason suggested. She would believe us. Hearing the way Jason said her name, like it was a lifeline to his past, made Piper's heart sink. Jason turned to her with a hopeful gleam in his eyes.
You could convince her, Pipes. I know you could.
Piper felt like all the blood in her body was draining into her feet. Annabeth looked at her sympathetically, as if to say, boys are so clueless. Even Hazel winced.
I could try, she said half-heartedly, but Octavian is the one we have to worry about. In my dagger blade, I saw him taking control of the Roman crowd. I'm not sure Reyna can stop him.
Jason's expression darkened. Piper didn't get any pleasure from bursting his bubble, but the other Romans, Hazel and Frank, nodded in agreement.
She's right, Frank said. This afternoon when we were scouting, we saw eagles again. They were a long way off, but closing fast. Octavian is on the warpath.
Hazel grimaced.
This is exactly the sort of opportunity Octavian has always wanted. He'll try to seize power. If Reyna objects, he'll say she's soft on the Greeks. As for those eagles, it's like they could smell us.
They can, Jason said. Roman eagles can hunt demigods by their magical scent even better than monsters can. This ship might conceal us somewhat, but not completely. Not from them. Leo drummed his fingers.
Great. I should have installed a smoke screen that makes the ship smell like a giant chicken nugget. Remind me to invent that next time.
Hazel frowned.
What is a chicken nugget?
Oh, man.
Leo shook his head in amazement.
That's right. You've missed the last, like, 70 years. Well, my apprentice, a chicken nugget...
Doesn't matter, Annabeth interrupted. The point is, we'll have a hard time explaining the truth to the Romans. Even if they believe us. You're right, Jason leaned forward. We should just keep going. Once we're over the Atlantic, we'll be safe. At least from the Legion.
He sounded so depressed. Piper didn't know whether to feel sorry for him or resentful. How can you be sure? She asked. Why wouldn't they follow us?
He shook his head. You heard Reyna talking about the ancient lands. They're much too dangerous. Roman demigods have been forbidden to go there for generations. Even Octavian couldn't get around that rule. Frank swallowed a bite of burrito like it had turned to cardboard in his mouth.
So, if we go there...
We'll be outlaws as well as traitors, Jason confirmed. Any Roman demigod would have the right to kill us on sight. But I wouldn't worry about that. If we get across the Atlantic, they'll give up on chasing us. They'll assume that we'll die in the Mediterranean. The Mare Nostrum. Percy pointed his pizza slice at Jason.
You, sir, are a ray of sunshine.
Jason didn't argue. The other demigods stared at their plates except for Percy, who continued to enjoy his pizza. Where he put all that food, Piper didn't know. The guy could eat like a satyr.
So, let's plan ahead, Percy suggested. Make sure we don't die. Mr. D, Bacchus... Ugh, do I have to call him Mr. B now? Anyway, he mentioned the twins in Ella's prophecy. Two giants, Otis and, something that started with an F.
Ephialtes, Jason said.
Twin giants, like Piper saw in her blade.
Annabeth ran her finger along the rim of her cup.
I remember a story about twin giants. They tried to reach Mount Olympus by piling up a bunch of mountains.
Frank nearly choked.
Well, that's great. Giants who can use mountains like building blocks. And you say Bacchus killed these guys with a pine cone on a stick?
Something like that, Percy said. I don't think we should count on his help this time. He wanted a tribute, and he made it pretty clear it would be a tribute we couldn't handle.
Silence fell around the table. Piper could hear Coach Hedge above deck singing,
"Blow the man down," Except he didn't know the lyrics, so he mostly sang, blah, blah, hum-dee-dum-dum. Piper couldn't shake the feeling that Bacchus was meant to help them. The giant twins were in Rome. They were keeping something the demigods needed, something in that bronze jar. Whatever it was, she got the feeling it held the answer to sealing the doors of death. The key to endless death. She also felt sure they could never defeat the giants without Bacchus's help. And if they couldn't do that in 5 days, Rome would be destroyed and Hazel's brother Nico would die. On the other hand, if the vision of Bacchus offering her a silver goblet was false, maybe the other visions didn't have to come true either, especially the one of her, Percy, and Jason drowning. Maybe that was just symbolic. The blood of a female demigod, Gia had said, and the blood of a male. Piper, my dear, choose which hero will die with you. She wants two of us, Piper murmured. Everyone turned to look at her. Piper hated being the center of attention. Maybe that was strange for a child of Aphrodite, but she'd watched her dad, the movie star, deal with fame for years. She remembered when Aphrodite had claimed her at the bonfire in front of the entire camp, zapping her with a magic beauty queen makeover. That had been the most embarrassing moment of her life. Even here, with only 6 other demigods, Piper felt exposed. They're my friends, she told herself. It's okay. But she had a strange feeling, as if more than 6 sets of eyes were watching her. Today on the highway, she said, Gia told me that she needed the blood of only 2 demigods, 1 female, 1 male. She asked me to choose which boy would die. Jason squeezed her hand. But neither of us died. You saved us. I know. It's just, why would she want that? Leo whistled softly. Guys, remember at the Wolf House, our favorite ice princess, Keone? She talked about spilling Jason's blood, how it would taint the place for generations. Maybe demigod blood has some kind of power. Oh, Percy set down his 3rd pizza slice. He leaned back and stared at nothing, as if the horse kick to his head had just now registered. Percy? Annabeth gripped his arm. Oh, bad, he muttered. Bad, bad. He looked across the table at Frank and Hazel. You guys remember Polybetes? The giant who invaded Camp Jupiter, Hazel said. The anti-Poseidon you whacked in the head with a Terminus statue. Yes, I think I remember. I had a dream, Percy said, when we were flying to Alaska. Polybetes was talking to the Gorgons, and he said he wanted me taken prisoner, not killed. He said, I want that one chained at my feet so I can kill him when the time is ripe. His blood shall water the stones of Mount Olympus and wake Earth Mother. Piper wondered if the room's temperature controls were broken, because suddenly she couldn't stop shaking. It was the same way she'd felt on the highway outside Topeka. You think the giants would use our blood? The blood of 2 of us? I don't know, Percy said. But until we figure it out, I suggest we all try to avoid getting captured. Jason grunted. That I agree with. But how do we figure it out? Hazel asked. The mark of Athena, the twins, Ella's prophecy. How does it all fit together? Annabeth pressed her hands against the edge of the table. Piper, you told Leo to set our course for Atlanta. Right, Piper said. Bacchus told us we should seek out... What was his name? Phorcys, Percy said. Annabeth looked surprised, like she wasn't used to her boyfriend having the answers. You know him? Percy shrugged. I didn't recognize the name at first. Then Bacchus mentioned salt water, and it rang a bell. Phorcys is an old sea god from before my dad's time. Never met him, but supposedly he's a son of Gia. I still don't understand what a sea god would be doing in Atlanta. Leo snorted. What's a wine god doing in Kansas? Gods are weird. Anyway, we should reach Atlanta by noon tomorrow, unless something else goes wrong. Don't even say that, Annabeth muttered. It's getting late. We should all get some sleep. Wait, Piper said. Once more, everyone looked at her. She was rapidly losing her courage, wondering if her instincts were wrong, but she forced herself to speak.
"There's one last thing," she said. "The Eidolons, the possessing spirits, they're still here, in this room."
Chapter 12. Piper. Piper couldn't explain how she knew. Stories of phantoms and tortured souls had always freaked her out. Her dad used to joke about Grandpa Tom's Cherokee legends from back on the res, but even at home in their big Malibu mansion, looking out over the Pacific, whenever her dad recounted the ghost stories for her, she could never get them out of her head. Cherokee spirits were always restless. They often lost their way to the land of the dead, or stayed behind with the living out of sheer stubbornness. Sometimes they didn't even realize they were dead. The more Piper learned about being a demigod, the more convinced she was that Cherokee legends and Greek myths weren't so different. These Eidolons acted a lot like the spirits in her dad's stories. Piper had a gut sense they were still present simply because no one had told them to go away. When she was done explaining, the others looked at her uncomfortably. Up on deck, Hedge sang something that sounded like, "In the Navy," while Blackjack stomped his hooves, whinnying in protest. Finally, Hazel exhaled.
"Piper is right."
"How can you be sure?" Annabeth asked.
"I've met Eidolons," Hazel said, "in the underworld, when I was, you know,
dead." Piper had forgotten that Hazel was a second timer. In her own way, Hazel, too, was a ghost reborn.
"So?"
Frank rubbed his hand across his buzz-cut hair as if some ghosts might have invaded his scalp.
"You think these things are lurking on the ship, or?"
"Possibly lurking inside some of us," Piper said. "We don't know."
Jason clenched his fist. "If that's true..."
"We have to take steps," Piper said. "I think I can do this."
"Do what?" Percy asked.
"Just listen, okay?"
Piper took a deep breath.
"Everybody listen."
Piper met their eyes, one person at a time.
"Eidolons," she said, using her charm speak. "Raise your hands."
There was tense silence. Leo laughed nervously.
"Did you really think that was going to..."
His voice died. His face went slack. He raised his hand. Jason and Percy did the same. Their eyes had turned glassy and gold. Hazel caught her breath. Next to Leo, Frank scrambled out of his chair and put his back against the wall.
"Oh, gods,"
Annabeth looked at Piper imploringly.
"Can you cure them?"
Piper wanted to whimper and hide under the table, but she had to help Jason. She couldn't believe she'd held hands with... No, she refused to think about it. She focused on Leo because he was the least intimidating.
"Are there more of you on this ship?"
she asked.
"No,"
Leo said in a hollow voice.
"The Earth Mother sent three. The strongest, the best. We will live again."
"Not here, you won't," Piper growled. "All three of you, listen carefully." Jason and Percy turned toward her. Those gold eyes were unnerving, but seeing all three boys like that fueled Piper's anger.
"You will leave those bodies," she commanded.
"No,"
Percy said. Leo let out a soft hiss.
"We must live."
Frank fumbled for his bow.
"Mars almighty, that's creepy. Get out of here, spirits. Leave our friends alone."
Leo turned toward him.
"You cannot command us, child of war. Your own life is fragile. Your soul could burn at any moment."
Piper wasn't sure what that meant, but Frank staggered like he'd been punched in the gut. He drew an arrow, his hands shaking.
I've faced down worse things than you. If you want to fight..."
"Frank, don't."
Hazel rose. Next to her, Jason drew his sword.
"Stop,"
Piper ordered, but her voice quavered. She was rapidly losing faith in her plan. She'd made the Eidolons appear, but what now? If she couldn't persuade them to leave, any bloodshed would be her fault. In the back of her mind, she could almost hear Gia laughing.
"Listen to Piper,"
Hazel pointed at Jason's sword. The gold blade seemed to grow heavy in his hand. It clunked to the table and Jason sank back into his chair. Percy growled in a very un-Percy-like way.
"Daughter of Pluto, you may control gems and metals. You do not control the dead."
Annabeth reached toward him as if to restrain him, but Hazel waved her off.
"Listen, Eidolons," Hazel said sternly. "You do not belong here. I may not command you, but Piper does. Obey her."
She turned toward Piper, her expression clear.
"Try again. You can do this."
Piper mustered all her courage. She looked straight at Jason, straight into the eyes of the thing that was controlling him.
"You will leave those bodies," Piper repeated,
even more forcefully. Jason's face tightened. His forehead beaded with sweat.
We will leave these bodies. You will vow on the River Styx never to return to this ship," Piper continued, "and never to possess any member of this crew."
Leo and Percy both hissed in protest.
"You will promise on the River Styx," Piper insisted.
A moment of tension. She could feel their wills fighting against hers. Then all three Eidolons spoke in unison.
"We promise on the River Styx."
"You are dead," Piper said.
"We are dead,"
they agreed.
"Now leave."
All three boys slumped forward. Percy fell face first into his pizza.
"Percy!"
Annabeth grabbed him. Piper and Hazel caught Jason's arms as he slipped out of his chair. Leo wasn't so lucky. He fell toward Frank, who made no attempt to intercept him. Leo hit the floor.
"Ow!"
he groaned.
"Are you all right?"
Hazel asked. Leo pulled himself up. He had a piece of spaghetti in the shape of a three stuck to his forehead.
"Did it work?"
"It worked,"
Piper said, feeling pretty sure she was right.
"I don't think they'll be back."
Jason blinked.
"Does that mean I can stop getting head injuries now?"
Piper laughed, exhaling all her nervousness.
"Come on, Lightning Boy. Let's get you some fresh air."
Piper and Jason walked back and forth along the deck. Jason was still wobbly, so Piper encouraged him to wrap his arm around her for support. Leo stood at the helm, conferring with Festus through the intercom. He knew from experience to give Jason and Piper some space. Since the satellite TV was up again, Coach Hedge was in his cabin, happily catching up on his mixed martial arts cage matches. Percy's Pegasus Blackjack had flown off somewhere. The other demigods were settling in for the night. The Argo II raced east, cruising several hundred feet above the ground. Below them, small towns passed by like lit-up islands in a dark sea of prairie. Piper remembered last winter, flying Festus the Dragon over the city of Quebec. She had never seen anything so beautiful, or felt so happy to have Jason's arms around her. But this was even better. The night was warm. The ship sailed along more smoothly than a dragon. Best of all, they were flying away from Camp Jupiter as fast as they possibly could. No matter how dangerous the ancient lands were, Piper couldn't wait to get there. She hoped Jason was right that the Romans wouldn't follow them across the Atlantic. Jason stopped amidships and leaned against the rail. The moonlight turned his blonde hair silver.
"Thanks, Pipes," he said. "You saved me again."
He put his arm around her waist. She thought about the day they'd fallen into the Grand Canyon, the first time she'd learned that Jason could control the air. He'd held her so tightly, she could feel his heartbeat. Then they'd stopped falling and floated in midair. Best boyfriend ever. She wanted to kiss him now, but something held her back.
"I don't know if Percy will trust me anymore," she said. "Not after I let his horse knock him out."
Jason laughed. "Don't worry about that. Percy's a nice guy, but I get the feeling he needs a knock on the head every once in a while."
"You could have killed him."
Jason's smile faded. "That wasn't me."
"But I almost let you," Piper said. "When Gia said I had to choose, I hesitated and..."
She blinked, cursing herself for crying. Don't be so hard on yourself, Jason said. You saved us both. But if two of our crew really have to die, a boy and a girl...
I don't accept that. We're going to stop Gia. All seven of us are going to come back alive. I promise you.
Piper wished that he hadn't promised. The word only reminded her of the prophecy of seven, an oath to keep with a final breath. Please, she thought, wondering if her mom, the goddess of love, could hear her. Don't let it be Jason's final breath. If love means anything, don't take him away. As soon as she had made the wish, she felt guilty. How could she stand to see Annabeth in that kind of pain if Percy died? How could she live with herself if any of the seven demigods died? Already each of them had endured so much. Even the two new Roman kids, Hazel and Frank, whom Piper barely knew, felt like kin. At Camp Jupiter, Percy had recounted their trip to Alaska, which sounded as harrowing as anything Piper had experienced. And from the way Hazel and Frank tried to help during the exorcism, she could tell they were brave, good people. The legend that Annabeth mentioned, she said, about the Mark of Athena. Why didn't you want to talk about it? She was afraid Jason might shut her out, but he just lowered his head like he'd been expecting the question.
Pipes, I don't know what's true and what's not. That legend, it could be really dangerous.
For who?
All of us, he said grimly.
The story goes that the Romans stole something important from the Greeks back in ancient times, when the Romans conquered the Greek cities.
Piper waited, but Jason seemed lost in thought.
What did they steal? She asked.
I don't know, he said. I'm not sure anyone in the Legion has ever known. But according to the story, this thing was taken away to Rome and hidden there. The children of Athena, Greek demigods, have hated us ever since. They've always stirred up their brethren against the Romans. Like I said, I don't know how much of that is true.
But why not just tell Annabeth? Piper asked. She's not going to suddenly hate you. He seemed to have trouble focusing on her.
I hope not. But the legend says that the children of Athena have been searching for this thing for millennia. Every generation, a few are chosen by the goddess to find it. Apparently they're led to Rome by some sign. The Mark of Athena.
If Annabeth is one of those searchers, we should help her.
Jason hesitated. Maybe. When we get closer to Rome, I'll tell her what little I know. Honest. But the story, at least the way I heard it, it claims that if the Greeks ever found what was stolen, they'd never forgive us. They'd destroy the Legion and Rome, once and for all. After what Nemesis told Leo about Rome's being destroyed 5 days from now... Piper studied Jason's face. He was, without a doubt, the bravest person she'd ever known. But she realized he was afraid. This legend, the idea that it might tear apart their group and level a city, absolutely terrified him. Piper wondered what could have been stolen from the Greeks that would be so important. She couldn't imagine anything that would make Annabeth suddenly turn vengeful. Then again, Piper couldn't imagine choosing one demigod's life over another. And today, on that deserted road, just for a moment, Gia had almost tempted her.
I'm sorry, by the way, Jason said. Piper wiped the last tear from her face. Sorry for what? It was the Eidolon who attacked.
Not about that. The little scar on Jason's upper lip seemed to glow white in the moonlight. She'd always loved that scar. The imperfection made his face much more interesting. I was stupid to ask you to contact Reyna, he said. I wasn't thinking.
Oh.
Piper looked up at the clouds and wondered if her mother, Aphrodite, was somehow influencing him. His apology seemed too good to be true.
But don't stop, she thought.
Really, it's okay. It's just... I never felt that way toward Reyna, Jason said. So I didn't think about its making you uncomfortable.
You've got nothing to worry about, Pipes.
I wanted to hate her, Piper admitted. I was so afraid you'd go back to Camp Jupiter.
Jason looked surprised.
That would never happen. Not unless you came with me. I promise.
Piper held his hand. She managed to smile, but she was thinking, another promise. An oath to keep with a final breath. She tried to put those thoughts out of her mind. She knew she should just enjoy this quiet moment with Jason. But as she looked over the side of the ship, she couldn't help remembering how much the prairie at night looked like dark water. Like the drowning room she'd seen in the blade of her knife. Chapter 13. Percy. Forget the chicken nugget smokescreen. Percy wanted Leo to invent an anti-dream hat. That night he had horrible nightmares. First he dreamed he was back in Alaska on the quest for the Legion's eagle. He was hiking along a mountain road, but as soon as he stepped off the shoulder, he was swallowed by the bog. Muskeg, Hazel had called it. He found himself choking in mud, unable to move or see or breathe. For the first time in his life, he understood what it was like to drown. "It's just a dream," he told himself. "I'll wake up." But that didn't make it any less terrifying. Percy had never been scared of water. It was his father's element. But since the muskeg experience, he developed a fear of suffocation. He could never admit this to anyone, but it had even made him nervous about going in the water. He knew that was silly. He couldn't drown. But he also suspected that if he didn't control the fear, it might start controlling him. He thought about his friend, Thalia, who was scared of heights even though she was the daughter of the sky god. Her brother, Jason, could fly by summoning the winds. Thalia couldn't, maybe because she was too afraid to try. If Percy started to believe he could drown, the muskeg pressed against his chest. His lungs wanted to burst. "Stop panicking," he told himself. "This isn't real." Just when he couldn't hold his breath any longer, the dream changed. He stood in a vast, gloomy space like an underground parking garage. Rows of stone pillars marched off in every direction, holding up the ceiling about 20 feet above. Freestanding braziers cast a dim red glow over the floor. Percy couldn't see very far in the shadows, but hanging from the ceiling were pulley systems, sandbags, and rows of dark theater lights. Piled around the chamber, wooden crates were labeled props, weapons, and costumes. One read, "Assorted rocket launchers." Percy heard machinery creaking in the darkness, huge gears turning and water rushing through pipes. Then he saw the giant. Or at least Percy guessed that he was a giant. He was about 12 feet tall. A respectable height for a cyclops, but only half as tall as other giants Percy had dealt with. He also looked more human than a typical giant, without the dragon-like legs of his larger kin. Nevertheless, his long purple hair was braided in a ponytail of dreadlocks, woven with gold and silver coins, which struck Percy as a giantish hairstyle. He had a 10-foot spear strapped to his back, a giantish weapon. He wore the largest black turtleneck Percy had ever seen, black pants and black leather shoes with points so long and curly they might have been jester slippers. He paced back and forth in front of a raised platform examining a bronze jar about the size of Percy.
"No, no, no," the giant muttered to himself. "Where's the splash? Where's the value?"
He yelled into the darkness.
"Otis!"
Percy heard something shuffling in the distance. Another giant appeared out of the gloom. He wore exactly the same black outfit right down to the curly shoes. The only difference between the two giants was that the second one's hair was green rather than purple. The first giant cursed.
"Otis! Why do you do this to me every day? I told you I was wearing the black turtleneck today. You could wear anything but the black turtleneck."
Otis blinked as if he'd just woken up.
"I thought you were wearing a yellow toga today." "That was yesterday when you showed up in the yellow toga." "Oh, right. Sorry, Effie."
His brother snarled. They had to be twins because their faces were identically ugly.
"And don't call me Effie," Effie demanded. "Call me Effie Altes. That's my name. Or you can use my stage name. The Big F."
Otis grimaced.
"I'm still not sure about that stage name." "Nonsense, it's perfect. Now, how are the preparations coming along?"
"Fine,"
Otis didn't sound very enthusiastic.
The man-eating tigers, the spinning blades, but I still think a few ballerinas would be nice. No ballerinas!